Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Draft's coming up. Oh, yeah. Draft is coming up. We get a lot of that field stuff. Mac Jones stuff. Had a lot of it already. Tiki and Tierney, hour two. And, of course, we're coming from our studios here, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Tiki, we're going to do Masters here, but something just struck my eye during break on Twitter. You got to help me out with it. What am I missing here?
Mm-hmm.
I've got to be missing something. I've looked at it three different times.
With?
I even read the comments to make sure that I'm, like, not missing something that's very easy to, mm-hmm. like, I don't want to miss this, but I just saw this before. All right, so let's see. I'm not sure what this guy's job. What is his role? He covers. Okay. He covers the UNC and Duke basketball for The Athletic. Brendan Marks is his name.
Okay.
Not overly familiar with his work, but I'm sure he's good. All right. He just tweeted this out within the last hour. Hubert Davis's contract with UNC: 5 years, $400,000 base salary annually.
Okay.
We're starting with. What? Okay. That's where I'm like, what? It's got to be more.
Okay.
Total value, $1 million in year one, which is peanuts for UNC. Mm-hmm. Peanuts. Increasing by $100,000 each year.
What?
Okay, so in year two, he's going to make 1.1. Eligible. What, am I missing anything yet?
Like,
no. It's almost so rudimentary. I'm making sure I'm missing anything. Eligible for up to $1 million in bonuses annually. So there's bonuses, sure. So yeah. I'm like, okay.
But what are those bonuses? What are they based on?
For winning at $250,000, you win the championship. And at this rate, they're not going to win anything anytime soon. They got to build that thing up a little bit. What is going? So then I'm like, okay, let me get the database of college coaches from last mm-hmm. year to kind of see where. Now I know what the coach at Marist makes. He's not quite making a million.
Yeah.
But he's not, he's not miles from it. Like, you look at a conference like that, a mid-major where I went, Tiki knows that.
Yep.
Mike Quinnipiac, great hockey school, great campus. They pay their coach, I think, about $800,000 or $900,000. Like that's a mid-major, right? Okay.
This doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. Like, I'm pissed that Hubert Davis is getting hosed this way.
Is there a signing bonus attached to this as well?
That I don't know. Now,
I mean, we would say it if there was. I mean, I would think.
He
right?
seems to have all the other details. Yeah, right. So Roy Williams last year, I'm like, let me go to the database and see what's what. Roy Williams last year, total pay was $4.1 million.
Okay.
Everybody knows Calipari makes about $8 million. Coach K's around $7 million. Izzo's up there. We know the high flyers, right? Then you start to scroll down. I'm like, well, let me just see, what a guy like your boy makes. $3.6 million. Tony mm-hmm. Bennett, champion, deserves it all. But now you start to get to schools like,
who's he on par with?
That's what I was looking for, and it's a little bit of an incomplete database. But I'll give you a couple names here.
Yeah.
Names that he's in the same neighborhood as. Say, Mike Rhodes at VCU made $1.6 million total. So he's actually making less.
Yeah.
This can't be right.
No, it can't be.
$1.5 million for Mark Fox at Cal.
Maybe they left out a one.
They definitely
it's
did.
It's $1.4 million.
Right. John Brannan, who took over for Cronin at Cincinnati, is making $1.4 million.
Oh, he just got fired.
Well, so, I know. Well, yeah, I know. But he was, I'm saying, last year. Then you've got, now you start getting to like the Georgia States, and these guys are making $600,000-$700,000 a year. I don't know. I need to know more about those details.
Yeah.
It seems like our guy Hubert Davis got absolutely hosed.
Yeah. We have to look into that, 'cause that doesn't sound right at all.
Wow.
Especially 'cause for a guy that's been on the bench for, I mean,
Since 2012, he's been on that bench for Roy Williams.
So it's been 9 years. He probably was making about that just being an assistant, right?
I was going to say, I mean, you're a top assistant for a program like that. You're making, yeah, I mean, you're making seven, eight, nine, maybe mm-hmm. certain schools over a million. Yeah, if not a million. I don't get lead recruiters? Absolutely. Yeah. Well, anyway, I thought that was interesting. Maybe Hubert wants to go back and check the deal. Maybe try to get back to the table. All right, hopefully there's a detail missing because that just seems incredibly low. Masters, right? So, you know, it is pretty odd. Like, if you showed me this leaderboard, because mm-hmm. we talked about a Thursday, we talked Wednesday, we talked in anticipation of, we talked about a Thursday as we reacted to what we saw. We had Brandel Chambly on our show, as we always do, on Friday. You and I watched it all the weekend. And, of course, here we are getting ready to recap it now. If you gave me a sheet of paper that said, okay, winner will shoot minus 10, second place will shoot minus 9, and you'll have two players at minus 7 within three shots of the lead,
yeah,
I would, which is what we had, by the way, I would think that that would be on par, in line, to be a relatively epic finish.
Yes.
Yet, it was as mundane. It's not CBS's fault. No. Coverage is amazing. It was as mundane and without theater outside of the two mistakes. Nothing great happened.
Yeah.
Two bad things happened. It, like, I watched 5 hours and I was bored.
Yeah. It was like, where is the excitement that I'm going to remember when this is all said and done? I mean, it was almost pretty clear coming into the fourth round that Matsuyama had the clear advantage, right? He, unless he really laid some eggs, which he's not the kind of player that does that, mm-hmm. then you kind of felt like going into the fourth round that he was going to win the Masters. And the only thing you could have hoped for was maybe one of these like other players pushes him. And Will Zalatoris, who got close, he started to make some runs.
Yes.
Until he got towards the end of his rounds, like 16, 17, 18. He just couldn't putt. I mean, he missed some of these putts, BT, by 4 feet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's got 4 feet, 5 foot putt. He misses it by 4 feet. Mm. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But then again, he's 24 years old, and you kind of accept that. Mm-hmm. And then Schauffele, who came out of nowhere after having a horrible start to his Friday round or Sunday round, pulled within two at 16, and then he dropped it in the pond. And so, other than those two things happening, and those were negative, they weren't like positive.
Yeah.
It was kind of anticlimactic in a lot of ways.
It was. It really was. And I was hoping that we would get a low number, and we did. We got a 66 from Rahm, but he just started too far behind. Like, if Rahm was, you know, a little bit more in contention, he dropped the 66 in round four, which is what he did. It was the best. I think there was one other 66 or 67. But Rahm definitely shot a 66 yesterday. You know, now you've got some, even if he posed early and he's in the clubhouse, you at least know that Matsuyama's got, he's looking over his shoulder. He's got a cat. When you start to calculate somebody's score that's already in, it affects what you're doing. To me, or it could, the thing that really surprised me the most, and I want to play this from Xander Schauffele, who's a world-class player. He's a terrific American player. He's been, you know, on so many leaderboards right there. And he said something post-round about his miscalculation on 16, the par 3 after Matsuyama, airmail, well, not airmail, that ricocheted off the green and then went banging in the lake there, and he made a big number. That, you know, Schauffele now, he's got the tee box, he's going to 16, he's within, at that point, I believe it's a two-shot, yeah, it's two shots at that point, and then he rinses it and it's over. But listen to what he says about what he was thinking or really failed to incorporate before the tee shot at 16. What? Where's it? How in the world do you not think of it at that point? That green right there, and, you know, we all have these snapshots, what Tiger's mm-hmm. done, you know, Ray's Creek with Norman back in the day, Nicholas, 86 at the age of 46, raising his putter. Like, we have these moments where, you know, Phil from behind the tree ripping it up there, 5 feet from the pin. But how in the world, like, to me, that's the most, at least in my memory bank, that is the most – seared image in my mind. If you said, aside from the azaleas and like Magnolia Drive, the actual entrance into the course, into the property, if you said, all right, you know, what hole, what part of the golf course do you remember most? I would have to say the 16th green.
Yeah.
Because how many shots do you see? Nobody goes left of the pin because it dies out and there's water.
Yeah.
Every single shot, even though some are long, but if you hit the slope, oh, there's the slope. Oh, there it funnels down to the green. Listen, I mean, this guy can hit a better shot with his toe than I can hit with my body. I get that. But how are you not thinking that's the shot to have at 16?
I can kind of defend him. So for just to get the visual, the wind was hellacious out there. Like, you could only see it when they were putting, and you'd see their shirts like really flapping in the wing. They were backing off. They commented on this a couple of times.
Yeah, it was windy
on the broadcast, especially the featured group broadcast, which I was watching on Paramount
Plus. Oh, here we go.
Well, my boy Colt Nost is on there, so I was listening to Colt. But okay, you could see like the shirt like flapping, really. And I was like, man, that wind really is blowing.
Yeah, it's about 12 miles an hour.
It would gust to 20 at times. Yeah. So the problem is on 16, the wind, as he was mentioning it, the wind blows left to right, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you try to hit a draw, which is what he did, you know, a draw cuts, you know, right to left. Mm-hmm. It's like opposing forces. They're just working against each other. So he hits this towering, I mean, it was a beautiful shot off the club. I was like, damn, he crushed that thing. But with the opposing forces of the draw with the wind, it just made it hang up there and it fell short. But I defend him. I can defend him, BT, because he was so far back. I mean, there was a point when Matsuyama was 12 and Xander Schauffele was like six.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, dude, how much does this suck? You're playing with the guy who's going to be the eventual champion and you're going to finish like eight shots behind him. I mean, mm-hmm. that just sucks, right? Walking up to the 18th tee. But he got close. And so at 16, he's within two shots. He's like feeling it, like the adrenaline's there. You just want to muscle it. And so he, like, when you want to muscle something like that, because he hit it pure and he crushed it, tried to muscle it, but it was the wrong shot. I can understand how he forgot that you got to hit a draw there.
I can't understand.
Hit a fade there.
Then his caddy can't forget. It's his job.
His caddy should have told him right before he swung. Remember, you got to go left to right on this one. Can't go right to left.
Yeah.
And instead, he goes into the creek, and then it was kind of just a foregone conclusion at that. At that point.
And that's basic stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I give him props for climbing his way back into the event, no question.
Yeah.
He could have been roadkill for the last 2 hours of the telecast. No doubt about it. You know, if not for him, we really would have had nothing to watch.
That's right.
I'm not here to rip, you know, rip the young man. He's a good American player who's going to play on Ryder Cup teams, and he's going to win. He's good. I like Xander's game. I really do.
I agree.
But it's a stunning admission. I appreciate the candor. I don't even know if you say that. And it's almost too honest.
But it's the truth. Because if you watch every other shot.
It's a mental mistake.
Of course it was a mental mistake.
You can't have that at 16th hole, the Masters. A mental mistake. When you played there four previous. This is his fourth Masters, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. So he played that hole four times the first year, four times the second year.
Let me check.
I know the weather patterns are different.
No, no,
but
no,
he stepped up on
that
green 15 times in Masters competition, not to mention countless practice rounds.
Yeah, but here's the thing. How many times, and I don't know this, how many times was Xander Schauffele in contention at the Masters at that point? So his highest finish was this year. He was tied for second.
Second.
In 2019.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
No, he's been there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're right.
He's a great player.
You're right.
I mean, come on. You're giving a guy a pass, Barber. What are you doing?
I'm just, he had the adrenaline flowing, man.
But if the adrenaline's flowing, then you airmailed it by 13 yards.
But
Matsuyama did.
BT,
okay,
it doesn't matter. The club is the same, right? No matter what it is, the club is the same. It's just what shot you're hitting. He hit a draw. That was his problem. If he would hit a fade, he would have been okay. He would have cut it. It would have been okay. It would have landed on the right side of the green. He had a long putt. He could have, you know, two putted for par. Stayed right where he was. And then when Matsuyama, you know, misses that putt, it means something on 18. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
he just hit the wrong shot.
Well,
instead of drawing it, he cut it. I mean, well, instead of cutting it, he drawn it.
I got you. That's maybe you should just try to hit straight the one time. Although pro golfers, the old adage, they can't hit the ball straight pretty much.
No, they can't.
Okay, so we're going to ask this of David Duval, who was going to join us, former number one player in the world back in the day. You know, Tiger, and then you know, he stripped it away for a little bit, and then you had Vijay Singh for a little bit. You know, that was the early 2000s, I guess, during that period. He won the Open Championship. Duval, a great player, and then he lost his game. But a really good analyst who we've had on before with the Golf Channel. Mental mistake that's unforgivable. You know, we'll talk about that shot. Matsuyama, we'll talk about the Masters. Get into that a little more deeper next with Duval. Teke and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. It's a good jam, Teke. This is locker room music right here. Let's go beat somebody up. Oh, we're talking golf? We got to change the tune then. We can't beat anybody up on the golf course. Teke, this weekend, the PGA Tour returns to CBS. All right, many of the best golfers will descend on the famous Harbortown Golf Links course. It's in Hilton Head, South Carolina. It's the RBC Heritage Live. Coverage beginning at 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, Saturday and Sunday on CBS. Always a fun little event, fun little course. Teke and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Teke, let's stick with the Masters, joining our buddy David Duval, who has been with us a couple times on the show. It's been a little bit, but we've had David many times since he became an analyst for the Golf Channel. 13 PGA wins from 97 to 01, which is right when you and I started to watch golf. Not much before that. That was kind of our starting point, so we are well aware of David's incredible run when he rose to number one in the world. He won the championship, the Open Championship back in 01, so he's got a major as well. And David is with us here on Teke and Tierney again. David, Teke and Tierney, how are you today?
I'm good, fellas. How are you?
Awesome, man. We watched you a lot over the weekend. Great job. Great coverage. Yeah, no doubt. You and the entire Golf Channel crew putting out primo work as always. Let's have you pick this up. One of the things Teke and I were debating, and we'll get to Matsuyama for sure, which is the story. Mm-hmm. But, Dave, I got to tell you, to me, maybe unforgivable is a little bit too strong, but the miscalculation on 16 for the tee shot for Xander Schauffele, who's played there. You know, this is what, his fourth or fifth match. He's played that. He's been on that tee box a lot now, and he almost won it a couple years ago. How does he not properly calculate what's required for that shot?
You know what? With where that, I believe he hit an 8-iron, and with where that came up, the only thing I can assume was it was a complete miss hit. Hmm. You know, that was he landed a good 15 to 18 yards short of where he's trying to land it.
Yeah,
You know, you typically have a separation of maybe 10 to 12 yards per club. So I just have to say it was a complete miss hit.
Is that the kind of thing that can follow you around for a little? Next time you tee it up, are you thinking about that?
There is certainly that potential. You know, he had an opportunity after birdie in 15 and Hideki made that bogey, although it was a spectacular bogey, to put one in there close. I mean, that's a very easy flag to get to, especially for somebody who likes to hit right to left.
Yeah. Gotcha. You know, David, interesting, you know, BT and I were talking about the lack of drama on Sunday. You know, obviously it doesn't take away from what Hideki Matsuyama did, being the first Japanese born PGA player to win on tour or win a major. And obviously mm-hmm. win the Masters as well. And his caddy with the bow of the hat is probably the lasting memory, but I'm trying to think of like, what was the most memorable shot for Hideki on Sunday? There really wasn't one, was there?
Well, this is where you kind of go into the being a golf geek or nerd or just really appreciating the Augusta National Golf Course and how difficult some of the things are. It was two shots in a row for me that were memorable. Hideki standing in the 15th fairway with a 4-iron, and all he has to do is hit it into the right greenside bunker. Mm-hmm. Because just aim it over there, hit it in the bunker, you dump it out, it rolls right down next to the hole. But he overcooks it and hits it, you know, over the green into the lake on 16, which is just, it was nearly an unforgivable mistake. If you recall, earlier in the week, Shane Lowry was just over the 15th green, chipped it across into the water.
Yep.
Who was it? Who was it who putted it into the water off of the 15th green?
I saw that too. Lowry definitely had the one miscue.
Right.
I saw the other one. Okay. I got it. It happened a few times. Yep.
So you need to appreciate
how
unbelievably awesome Hideki's fourth shot was.
Okay.
Okay. He took his penalty drop, and pitched it. Now, remember, Lowry was 6 or 7 steps over the green. Hideki's 35 yards away on that same line. If he gets it onto the surface at all, that goes across the green into the water. And so he managed to put it up there, 2 feet off of the green, so he could put it down there, tap it in, and make a bogey. Mm-hmm. You know, if it gets any heat on it at all, it goes across the green, goes in the water, and he's looking at making 8 or 9. Uh-huh. So that shot right there is what kind of sealed the tournament, I think.
Well, let me ask you this, David. We're talking to David Duval, because in real time, Faldo was saying to Jim Nance that should be the play. Like Faldo's taking us through his mind. If I'm playing this shot, I'm actually looking to play short of the green, get to where Matsuyama eventually got, and then just chip it on very easily, and then, you know, get the hell out onto the next tee box. He wound up in the spot that Faldo was telling him to, but did he get there by accident? Like, was that what he was trying to do?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think the intent wasn't necessarily, it would have been just kind of an extra bonus and a bit lucky for it to get on the putting surface. But you got to remember, he needed to get it somewhere from where he did, 2 feet off the green, to within 6 or 7 feet of the green. So he had a two-step little area he needed to get it into, because if he doesn't, if he's 3 or 4 more steps off of the green, now he's facing that difficult pitch that can easily run across the green into the water again.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot.
It was really an amazing little pitch shot that, you know, well, nobody thinks about a whole lot, but it was an incredible pitch shot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a great point. To me, this tournament for Matsuyama was won on Saturday, on moving day.
And yeah,
we had that rain. We had the rain delay, 78 minutes. I don't know what he did. I think they said he played video games. But
yeah, they say he looked at his phone and played video games.
You're right, but he comes back out, and he's on Amen Corner. So it's not like, you come back out, you just got an easy hole. But here's what he does. He goes birdie, birdie, par, par. Eagle, birdie, birdie, par to round out that final 8. Basically, mm-hmm. goes from -5 to 11, right? That, how do you like refocus yourself? Or this actually may be the bigger issue, because of the rain delay, you're actually not even thinking about the pressure of what's happening.
Well, I don't know if you're not thinking about it, but if you were watching all Saturday when they resumed. Hideki Matsuyama was the only one who had the speed of the greens right after the rain delay.
Yes.
The greens got a lot of moisture in them with that passing storm. They slowed down dramatically, and nobody got a putt to the hole except Hideki, which tells me he went over and hit a few balls to make sure he was loose, and then he spent all his time on the practice putting green to make sure he figured out and adjusted to the new speed of the greens, because they slowed down at least a foot.
Yeah.
From when they were playing earlier in the day to resuming play after the rain delay.
Yeah, we know that Jordan Spieth didn't make the adjustment. He talked about that, and you know, he didn't figure out the new speed on the greens, and obviously Matsuyama did. So we're talking to David Duval, former number one in the world, 13 wins on tour, former number one player, Open Championship as well, analyst for the Golf Channel. You know, David, I'm curious, and when you talk about the Japanese player, there's always prefaced with an intense pride and respect, and I know, at least in the case of Matsuyama, almost like embarrassed if he hits a bad shot. Like, the Japanese culture is a very unique one, and very so much built on respect, and so easy to root for and respect. But I wonder, if you're playing with Matsuyama, is it unsettling because there's no communication? Yeah, I know that there's universal, like, nice shot, tip of the cap. I get it. You make a putt, you know, you could still let somebody who doesn't speak English know that you appreciated the putt and vice versa. But you're playing for 5 hours and you're not really saying anything. Is that good or is that bad?
It's neither here nor there. You
really?
Know, some people talk, some people don't. You know, Hideki can speak to you. You can have a conversation, but that goes again to what you said about Japan and the culture and the pride they have. A lot of the Japanese players who continue, and Asian players in general who continue to use interpreters, they can speak some English, but they don't want to mess up and they feel like it's embarrassing because they don't do it perfectly. So they maintain their, you know, native tongue. And so it's not a big deal. And being out, you know, like if you play around with Faldo, 25 years ago, he wouldn't say a word to you, you know?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
And then if you play with, you know, pick I mean, player from, but like Lee Trevino, hell, you couldn't get him to shut up.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's like, it just all is the player. I mean, and those are all just how everybody handles the situations differently.
Yeah. What I was going to say, T, what about you, David? I just remember those Oakley frames down. I don't remember you saying a whole lot. Were you talking?
You know what? I'm out there working, guys.
Yeah.
We're out working, you know. This isn't for fun. This is for put your name in history books. And so, you know, these guys, this is real business. And, you know, it's just everybody handles the nerves and handles the situations differently. I didn't speak a whole lot, but I also didn't intentionally not speak, you know, but I was just focused on what I was doing.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to me at the bar.
We can be friends afterwards.
Yeah. Talk to me at the bar. Exactly. Buy me a beer. We'll have some chats. What does this do for Hideki? I mean, obviously he's iconic now in Japan. And even he said this after the round that he hopes it inspires, you know, young Japanese golfers to take up the sport. Not dissimilar to how Tiger's impact was on the African-American community, at least in an interest standpoint. What does this do for Hideki?
Well, you know what? It's we tried to kind of talk about it Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Him winning the Masters as a Japanese player, he's basically Japan's Michael Jordan, Muhammad Ali. I mean, he is the biggest star there's ever been now.
Yeah,
wow. In Japanese athletics, financially with the fame and stuff that goes on. I mean, he could potentially make $1 billion.
Wow.
I said it on air on Sunday morning. I mean, he could be the first billion-dollar golfer because of that victory.
Wow.
It's just the love and respect they have for the game of golf in Japan, and then how they idolize their golfing heroes, how I was treated when I went over there and played. I mean, like I was a rock star in Japan. I mean, I was a big rock star, but Tiger Woods was like, you know, the president. Tiger was like a god. You know, and that's how they view it. I mean, and they go nuts. We played when Tiger and I played in the World Cup over there. I mean, it was 20 deep on every hole. I mean, we had thousands upon thousands of people following us. And now you have somebody from Japan in Hideki who a lot has been expected of, and he delivered. I mean, he's got to be the biggest star Japan's produced at this point, and that's probably how he'll be treated.
Wow. I mean, awesome, as you're saying that, I'm thinking of names like Sadahara Oh, their home run king. I'm thinking of Ichiro Suzuki. I understand, mm-hmm. you know, I know baseball's
no championship for Ichiro, though.
I hear you. No, I'm not challenging the statement. Yeah. I'm just thinking about the depth of it. It's very interesting.
Hey, what did you
mean, he's Masters champion. I mean, there's certainly that potential. And think about this.
Yeah.
You got Summer Olympics coming up. He very well might be the flag bearer for his nation now.
Oh. Wow.
Think about that.
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Dave, before we let you go, I know you saw it. Everybody saw it. It became, I think, maybe one of the more iconic images off of the Masters was Shota Hayafuji, his caddy, tipping his cap and bowing after putting the flag back in. What did you think about that as you saw it happening?
Not surprising. That speaks exactly to the culture, to the sportsmanship, and to the respect and love that the Japanese players and their caddies bring to the game of golf. I mean, it was actually just the most beautiful, wonderful moment. You know, it was basically him saying thank you to Augusta National and showing it the respect and love it deserves.
I mean, if I was the caddy to my guy one, I would be opening up a fifth of vodka. I'd be doing cartwheels. I don't know what I'd be doing, Dave.
Well, it's a different culture, and you just got to love it and respect it. It's
beautiful. We definitely do. It was great for Matsuyama. Great job on the coverage, man. We watch you guys all the time. Appreciate you carving out some time, David. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, fellas. Thank you. Have a great day.
There you go, man. Right back to you, David Duval. Yeah, who ascended to the number one when Tiger Woods was at the apex of his powers. Duval said, I'm going to take that baton for a little bit, Mr. Woods. You don't mind, do you?
No, right? I know David said this said it before the round on Sunday, and people repeated it afterwards. But think about that, what he just said.
The $1 billion.
Yeah. Like, just from endorsements and just the fame that now is going to follow Hideki Matsuyama every time he sets foot in Japan. Talk about life-changing.
Well, I don't even think, but I don't even think just when he steps foot in Japan, now the coverage when every event that he goes and plays stateside, anywhere in the world.
That's right.
The Japanese media, which is already ever-present, will further descend upon. And by the way, how cool was it that CBS was piping in the Japanese broadcast?
Yeah, I agree.
During the shots?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
I had no idea what they were saying, but
no, you could just tell them when it hit the water, they weren't happy. Universal sigh is a universal sigh.
That's a good point.
I got you. Teague, let's get the update. Ack will take care of that. All right, coming up after this. So the Packers aren't signing any free agents. Might be Aaron Rodgers' fault. We'll tell you what we mean by that at the Ack's update, which is right now. Here's Rich. All right, doing more, brought to you by the Home Depot. Bring on spring with innovative help from the Home Depot mobile app. Download it today and get started on spring projects. It's the Home Depot, how doers get more done. How about Red Sox DH J.D. Martinez? Kind of thought he was maybe a little past his prime. I know I did. He's the hottest hitter on the planet right now. He smashed three bombs yesterday. The Red Sox won 14-9. They beat the Orioles. So Martinez has an extra base knock in all eight games he's played in so far this year, including seven doubles and five home runs. Wow. He's led the Red Sox to six straight wins. They currently sit atop the American League East, and most people thought, well, they and the Orioles would be in the basement. You know, certainly Yankees, who have had some early issues. The Rays, always competitive and talented. Toronto, a lot of good young players, good offseason. Those are the three teams that were certainly thought to be the three best in the division. And the Red Sox were building, et cetera. Red Sox are playing well. Yankees don't look too hot. We'll see. I mean, it's early, obviously.
Yeah, Yankees pitchers are letting them down consistently.
So is the hitting, too, though. True. I mean, every game I watch, guys banging into double plays with the bases juiced, not getting a runner over, striking out with man on third, less than two out. Like, they are just, situationally, the Yankees don't look very good at all, but that's early. All right, so, you know, there's a report out there now, Teague, that the Packers are telling agents who are trying to peddle their clients, believe it or not, there's still some free agents out there. You know, how many big fish? Not many. I would estimate probably 85-ish% of the free agents already signed.
Yeah.
And if not 85%, then at least 85% of the truly desirable ones. Most are gone, but there's still a few, you know, a few deals that could be had here. But apparently, the Packers are telling agents they can't sign anybody because they have not yet been able to restructure Aaron Rodgers' contract. Now, if things don't go well in Green Bay this year and people point to, well, they didn't make any upgrades or they didn't do this and that for Aaron Rodgers, at what point, and I'm asking the question, I'm not sure of the answer yet, but I want you to take it first. At what point do we have to look directly at Aaron Rodgers and say, all right, we understand that they didn't do certain things for, and they haven't done certain things for you, but that could have been mitigated by you to an extent if you would have restructured and freed up money. How valid is that?
I'm saying never. Never really? Are we going to get to that point where we're blaming Aaron Rodgers. Like, Aaron Rodgers got basically, not, I don't want to say stabbed in the back, because it really wasn't that bad. If they would have drafted Love in the like the eighth pick, then that's a stabbing in the back for a guy who goes on and gets a an MVP for the season. But I mean, he was picked late in the 20s, 22nd, I believe. I forget where they moved up to.
It was 23rd,
whatever it was, in the early 20s. So at that point, the kid is still a project. He's not, you know, Jordan Love's not, hey, you got 2 years, Aaron Rodgers, and then you're out of here. It's more like we want this kid to develop behind you. We think you're on the downside, and you know, good luck. And he goes out and gets an MVP. I don't think Aaron Rodgers owes the Packers anything, to be honest with you. I think that they have a pretty good roster as it is. And if they do want to free up cap space, they have to do right by Aaron Rodgers. You can't just, as they're trying to do it, push it into a signing bonus, which basically incentivizes them to cut him the next year. And if they want to do right by Aaron Rodgers, they need to extend him and make him their quarterback without doubt for the next 2 years at least. Before he does them any favors. If that
like we've
sense.
Seen over the years, you know, the Steelers extending Ben or the Giants extending Eli and Tom Brady. I mean, we've seen this over and over.
That's right.
But
that's not what they're trying to do. They're trying to restructure his contract, at least according to reports.
Yeah.
They're trying to restructure his contract and make future salary into a signing bonus right now, which makes it easier to move off of him very quicker rather than later.
And easier to justify the selection of Jordan Love in the first round if that's and right. when they give the football to him. and it's going to be eventually when, probably not an if, I might be willing to be to place a little more of the blame at his doorstep than you. Maybe not much.
Why?
Not much.
He signed a contract.
They got to honor it.
You understand?
We'd say the same thing if it was Aaron Rodgers coming back and saying, hey, I need more money. You know, we'd say, you signed a contract. We'd say Aaron Rodgers deserves more money. Well, I would say that.
If he hadn't performed to it, we would. But if he was saying it just to say it, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Say he had an average season the last couple of years. And, you know, they were seven wins. But he was still really good. And he was like, hey, I think I need more money because the rest of the quarterbacks in the NFL are now making $34 million a year. I need to be making $34 million a year. And you'd say, yeah, okay, prove it. On the field, you signed a contract. Deal with it, right? Yeah. But the reality is Aaron Rodgers is paid exactly what he's worth. His cap number is kind of exactly what he's worth. If you're the MVP, I mean, it's okay to have the highest cap number in the National Football League right now.
I don't begrudge him for that. He's fantastic. I love watching the guy. I guess what I'm having a little second thoughts about. I think the responsibility of the franchise quarterback has changed a little bit. Like, there's got to be an awareness and a flexibility to roll with the financial punches that allows you to, yes, of course, still get yours, but to also go out there and restock the cupboards each year.
Yeah.
The Bucs didn't lose anybody. Why? Because Tom Brady's amenable to it.
Yeah, but this is different. Tom Brady came in as a mercenary. Aaron Rodgers has been there for his entire career, and they have not done right by him.
Yeah, but Brady did that with the Patriots too, taking lesser money.
Completely different dynamic.
But
they did
that's why he's got more championships, man.
It's not exactly.
That didn't even sound right when I said that. I'm just stuffing that in there.
Yeah, you're right. I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like,
I know what you mean. But the coaching is such a big part of it.
Agreed.
I mean, Mike McCarthy was a disaster for a few years there in Green Bay. Even though he was a good head coach, it was like, dude, man, what's you calling the plays? You're not calling the plays.
Wasn't that good with Dallas either.
You really wouldn't. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him, BT, to have a double-digit win season really quickly. Otherwise, we're going to start saying, how good actually was Mike McCarthy?
Teek, if they're 3-4, even if they're 3-3 and it's a bad loss, you're going to stop. I'm not saying you could hear, we're not going to say fire him, but you're going to have an undercurrent of displeasure that is impossible to ignore.
That's right.
His seat can go from somewhat benign to
benign.
Flames fast.
I 100% agree, BT.
You know?
And especially in a division that, you know, seems open for the taking, even though we know some of the teams are getting better in the division. But my point is, back to Aaron Rodgers, I don't think he owes them anything. I think if the Packers want to do something to clear up space, they have to go there with their forgiveness gloves on. Like, come on, Aaron, help us out here. We want to get better. We want to try to win a championship. Help us. Mm-hmm. But they can't keep positioning this as this is Aaron's fault that we can't sign any free agents.
Do we know that they haven't broached that with his people?
I don't know. I mean, you know how, I mean, I don't know how Aaron is in person, but I know how he is perceived. Mm-hmm. He's aloof. I don't mean that in a negative way. He's just like, I'm doing my thing and it is what it is.
But doing his thing might be preventing him from getting that number two championship.
True.
Again, he doesn't owe the Packers anything but performing his best. He doesn't have to, restructure. I'm not saying he has to. I don't even really hold it against him.
Well, if he's going to, why would he restructure? Right? Because think about this.
They could have gotten one of these players. They could have gotten Juju Smith-Schuster for $11 million.
Okay, but
Steelers gave him $8 million. You don't think if the Packers gave him $11 million, he's coming?
But stop thinking about like that stat for
but
two
I
seconds.
Can't because he needs more players around them to beat the Bucks and win.
But they – look, the Packers have mismanaged this relationship with Aaron Rodgers for a while now. Now, some of it is on Aaron Rodgers because he got injured, and he never was injured, and he got injured like twice in the 3-year time frame, and so it kind of forced him to say, "Hey, guys, this guy's getting old." But then he turns around and has an MVP type season, and it's almost like the chips go back into his court in a sense. And so, if he restructures the way that they want him to restructure, which is basically just get more signing bonus, then it makes it more likely that they can just move off from him.
Understood.
And so the reality is if they want to do something with Aaron Rodgers' salary, they need to make it more than just benign. to use your word,
yep,
going forward. Like, it can't just be, you know, apple for apple.
It can't be a push. It's got to be
exactly
net gain for Rodgers.
That's exactly right.
Understood.
It's got to be net gain.
And yeah, and by the way,
they're not willing to do that.
I don't disagree with that.
They want a restructure, not an extension. That's
I know what you mean.
Difference.
And that's doing them a little bit dirty, which is why I asked the question, are we sure they haven't broached that other? I don't know. I'm sure we would know if they did, by the
but
way.
But if they did, BT, that's basically admitting that they wasted a draft pick on Jordan Love.
Yeah, but then if you're just being egotistical and belligerent and inflexible, then that's even worse than being wrong.
It's true.
I mean, if you're wrong on Love, and you're certainly wrong with the timing of Jordan Love. We don't know if they're wrong with the talent of Jordan Love. We don't know that because he hasn't played a snap.
No.
We can definitively say, oh, yeah, you're off with the timing. In terms of the talent, to be determined. Listen, at the end of the day, I'm cool with the way everything's going. I just don't want to hear, whether it's this season or next season or 5 or 10 years down the road when he's retired, you know, Rodgers, man, you know, he only got that one championship. And as good as he was, he really should have had more than one. You know what? If you're not – hey. You got to make some concessions if you want the star talent.
Yeah.
Everybody else does it.
I don't disagree.
That's all I'm saying.
I think that's more on the Packers than it is on Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know about that. I don't think he's shown a real willingness or hasn't been proactive
for
sure.
We don't know that. By the way, 26. I knew it was – I couldn't remember where it was.
26. He got
26
drafted.
Pick. Okay. First, 26. First round. I mean, I think that Aaron would be amenable to it.
Yeah.
But again, it's got to be an extension, which basically makes them now like ass out on Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Because Jordan's not going to play at all. He's basically going to come free. He's going to be, his rookie contract's going to be up and they have no intel on him.
Could trade him.
You could. And that's something to think about, to be honest with you.
You know, if the Jets got a 2, a 4, and a 6 for Darnold. You know, at least, you know, you've seen Darnold play, but then you could even say, well, and, you know, I'm a supporter, but you can say for those detractors of Darnold, and there's a lot, well, you saw him play, and you still got a 2, 4, and a 6.
Right.
You haven't seen Jordan Love play.
And he's raw, and you can craft him into however you want,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're getting a first back for the guy, but I don't know, maybe maybe something with incentive where, you know, not like the escalator where, you know, if he gets X amount of snaps for the team, it goes from a 3rd to a 2 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
There's ways to construct these deals if you're motivated to make a move. It's just, you know, it's like watching, you know what it feels like in a lot of ways? It's not the best comparison, but it's kind of like watching Damian Lillard go into the playoffs every year.
Hmm.
Like, you just think that he should have a little more around him to give himself more of a chance.
You know he's great, but you also know that he's not winning a ring.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think that they were going to win it last year, even with the 13 wins, but we'll see. Well, Kevin Durant apparently isn't too interested in championships anymore, Teak. Apparently not motivated by championships. Kyrie's not motivated to necessarily play. KD's not motivated by championships. What do we think of that? We'll hit it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.